Hi, and welcome to Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have on the phone with us a buddy of mine, a very well-known big game hunter out here in the West. He's got his own podcast, been blogging for a number of years. I'm sure you heard him before. His name is Jay Scott. How you doing, Jay?
John, I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good, man. It's been a little bit of a crazy day. I'm in the process of remodeling my house, running three businesses. You know, wearing too many hats right now. So, but
just another day in the life, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But yeah, no complaints. I kick off my hunting season here in a few days. I leave Sunday for my first hunt. Be hunting blacktail in California.
And, awesome.
I'm excited about that. Kind of get back in the woods here. Start getting the ball rolling. Well, Jay, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, for those that are, for those who don't know who you are.
Absolutely. I'm a real estate investor first and foremost. I got my real estate license in 1997 and I've been practicing looking for real estate deals, much like I treat my hunting. I hunt for real estate deals on a daily basis, and that's what I do for a living. And I'm also an outfitter, a hunter. I'm a love to fly fish, and I'm actually spend the summers in Colorado. Got my own 13-foot fly fishing raft, and just chase trout all over and row down the rivers, and try and put my friends on fish and family on fish, and really enjoy that. I'm an outfitter for desert bighorn sheep, elk, Gould's turkey, coos deer, pretty much any big game animal in Arizona. I do coos deer hunts in Mexico, Gould's turkey hunts in Mexico as well, and just love to hunt and fish. Host a podcast, Jay Scott Outdoors, Western Big Game Hunting and Fishing Podcast. And,
which is one of my favorites, by the way.
Well, I appreciate that. Appreciate your support. And, just love to hunt and fish and enjoy life as much as I can.
Cool. I ask this of everybody I interview. How'd you get started in hunting?
You know, it's kind of a cool story. My grandmother on my mom's side used to get me Field & Stream and Outdoor Life magazine probably when I was about 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, just buried me with those magazines. And I was the kid that read those magazines cover to cover, literally folding the corners of each magazine on stories and such that I liked, tips that I liked and that I needed to remember. And I didn't have much exposure to the outdoors as far as hunting and fishing at an early age, but I always read about it and dreamt about it. And read, all the magazines, anything I could get my hands on, and, probably started out fishing as a young boy, any chance that I could get if anybody would take me. And that just led into really loving the outdoors. And I came from a ranching family, so outdoors were always prevalent in my life. But, I'm a huge proponent of taking a kid hunting and fishing because I had some dear friends in grade school, Jason and Dave Meldy, and their dad actually would take me along just like I was one of his kids and take me hunting.
That's awesome.
When I was 15, I shot my first deer with my dad actually in Colorado. And loved it ever since. I was the guy that stood on the bank of a river or a lake and watched guys go by in a boat. And I just sat there just dreaming of someday owning a boat and wanting to float rivers and so now that I've got the chance to do it, it seems like every day is a new adventure for me, and I just have a huge passion for hunting and fishing.
That's awesome. I like it. I like the fact that that somebody else other than a family member took you out, because that's kind of important. I mean, if you guys have, you know, friends of friends or whatever, and your kids' friends, and they don't have that in their life, and you see they got an interest, grab a hold of that interest and take those kids. But, you know, because without it, this is all going away. If we're not recruiting new hunters and stuff like that, it's just you can kiss us all goodbye. The heritage is gonna be gone. So.
Yeah, and I mean any chance you can get to help a kid get interested in hunting and fishing and in the sport of it and how to do things and you know the technique and all the planning and all the things that go with it. Expose them to it, and hopefully they'll take to it. But yeah, I'm a huge proponent of taking a kid hunting and fishing, and I probably wouldn't have had some of the adventures that I've had if it weren't for those guys taking me out and treating me like I was one of their own, and I owe a lot to them for sure.
That's huge. Well, so the interviews with the masters, the way it works is I get questions thrown at me all the time, either via, you know, social media or on the different websites I'm associated with, the Outdoor Insiders, the Hunting Channel, so on and so forth. And I start putting these questions aside, especially the ones that I get asked multiple times, until I get enough of them. And then I go and ask that group of questions or that category of questions to the guy who I feel is, like, best suited to answer them. So that's why I invited you on today. And my questions are all about sheep hunting, since you are very well known for sheep hunting, desert sheep hunting here in Arizona. And so that's where my bank of questions is coming from.
Look forward to it.
All right. So my first question I have is, what things should you do to prepare for a sheep hunt? You know, physically, mentally, logistics, you know, any type of practicing, or just go through the whole gamut, and, you know, I'll kind of poke at you here and there for a little clarification, I'm sure, as you go.
Yeah, well, first I'd like to ask you a question in regards to this. Are you referring more to desert sheep hunting, Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep hunting, or you know, stone or doll? What do you want to know about the most?
Me personally, I want to know about desert sheep, but I'm sure our listeners. Well, let's start with desert sheep, just because I know that's kind of your mainstay. Not that you don't do Rocky sheep out here too. You guys do Rocky sheep, but it's just I think, yeah, let's go with the desert sheep.
Perfect. And I haven't had the fortune yet to hunt stone or doll sheep. I have guided for desert bighorn sheep and Rocky Mountain bighorn in Arizona, and the Arizona draw results, the credit cards have just been hit, and everybody's excited because, those that are getting sheep permits probably know that their credit card has been hit. And then the next question, like you say, is, how do you prepare for a sheep hunt physically, mentally, you know, the logistics and what have you. And I would say first and foremost, the first thing that you need to do is you kind of need to evaluate your own level of skill, and you need to evaluate what kind of shape you're in. You know, how, you know, if you're finding out now in July, you obviously in Arizona, you have until December. If you've drawn Nevada desert bighorn, you know, those hunts are in November. You have some time, but the reality is most sheep hunts are very physically demanding, very mentally demanding. So what I do is I start preparing myself for the grind. And I like to when I'm guiding a sheep hunt, I like to approach it like it's my last hunt, like it's going to be my last hunt and I got to lay it all out on the line. So one of the things that I do is I try and take photos and video of as many bighorn sheep, as many rams as I can. And I try and keep record by creating folders on my computer, by creating folders on my iPad, and trying to document and spend as much time in the unit as I can, because my whole goal is to try and find every single ram in the unit. Now, obviously, a lot of times that doesn't come to fruition, and it's hard to see every single ram in the unit. But if I found that if you attack the sheep hunt like it's your last hunt, and with the notion that you want to look at every single ram, you want to take a photo and video of every single ram in the unit, then by the time your hunt rolls around, you'll have a really good sense of the inventory of what's there. And so I think by having a good sense of the inventory at that point, then you can make a really good decision as far as the type of ram that exists in the unit. And so, Dara and I, my guiding partner, we keep extensive notes and documentation and, photos, videos of each ram. And another thing that it helps us with is, if you're in a unit and you're scouting a particular unit, and you may not even have a hunter that year, but if you take as many photos and videos as you can, maybe the next year you'll have a hunter in that unit, or the year after, or the year after. So documenting those rams and trying to establish their age, how mature they are, and watching their horn configuration is huge, especially in guiding sheep hunters. Knowing what is there is half the battle. And I would say, and if I get to rambling, let me know.
No, not at all. You're almost answering my next question, but go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, I think, knowing what is there is half the battle. So I think if you can talk to game and fish officers, talk to hunters that have had the tag previous, talk to guides that have guided in the unit if you can, if you're going to do this hunt on your own, talk to as many people as you can. And then another tip that I like to give in my preparation on sheep hunts, especially when I'm going in new units, is I like to gather every single photograph that I can get my hands on. And particularly I like to get rams in that unit. And not only just photos, but I try and get all of the official score sheets that I can. If there's not official score sheets, I go to the Arizona Game and Fish score sheets, or if you're in Nevada or California or whatever state you're in, try and get as much information about the prior rams that have come from that unit. The reason is this: if you can get kind of an average baseline for the size of bases, the length of horns, and the quarter measurements, you are going to have a really good leg up when you're trying to field judge and evaluate rams. Also, a good thing is to try and get photographs, figure out the age on the rams, so that when you're looking, it's easier to count rings when you've looked at a bunch of photos and you say, okay, this ram's 8 years old, this ram's 6 years old, this ram's 10 years old, this ram's 12 years old. When you've got a lot of photos, and not just, I hound people, I'll say, hey, I saw you shot a ram 6 years ago or 12 years ago in such and such a unit. I say, can I have a front photo, a left photo, a right, right horn photo, and from behind? And a lot of times on those photos, I'm actually going to put the measurements and the age and what have you on that photo, so that when I'm then trying to find every ram in the unit, I say, well, man, this ram looks a lot like the ram that got killed 4 years ago that scored 172 inches, that was an 8-year-old ram. He had 15-inch bases. You know, mm-hmm. let's compare, you know, I've got, you know, 4 or 5 photos in the, you know, similar category. And then I like to bring up on the computer screen those old pictures that I've gathered with the new subject ram and try and evaluate. Is the subject ram as big as the one in the photos? Does he look bigger? How does his body size compare? And you know, so that's kind of how I prepare for those type of hunts. As far as mentally, I'm trying to gather as much information about the unit, about rams, and then also gather photos of rams that are, you know, maybe not even in that unit, but nearby units. You know, the right. Western deserts of Arizona are going to have different characteristics than the central Arizona rams, you know, 22, 24. They're going to have, you know, a whole different horn shape. Or if you're hunting, you know, Nelson Eye desert sheep as opposed to Mexicana. I know when Dar and I started guiding the Arizona raffle desert sheep hunters, Nelson Eye sheep was completely new to us. And so I basically gathered every single bit of photo and video and talked to anyone that would listen to me about Nelson Eye, trying to, you know, see the differences between the two sheep and how to field judge them accurately. You know, the type of terrain that they're in a lot of times differs. And so, you know, I'm huge into being a you know, for the love of the game, for the love of the sport, and diving full in. Any hunt that I'm going to go in, I'm going to go jump in with both feet. I'm going to try and learn as much as I can the whole time. And that is a huge help when you then find a ram that you think is something that you might want to harvest. You've got a lot of background data to, you know, solidify, you know, deciding whether you're going to shoot that ram or not.
Awesome. Yeah, man, you're a different breed. I got to tell you. I mean,
I'm particular. I'm particular. Yeah. I'm the same way with my real estate
business.
Well,
you're very methodic. That's good.
Yeah.
Though. I mean,
yeah.
That's why you've had the success you've had.
Well, it's definitely helped.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously it's a physical hunt. So you definitely need to do a lot of hiking and all that stuff and get your body in shape. Mentally, you kind of cover that. Logistics-wise, you know, is this something somebody can operate out of a nearby hotel, or is somebody you want to set up a really good camp? Or, I mean, you have a whole month to hunt, too. That's another thing. So,
yeah, the logistics of a sheep hunt, I think, are important, because if your logistics are taken care of way ahead of time and you have a really good plan, it's much easier to execute a great plan than to not have a plan and try and execute. John, it would blow your mind if you knew all of the stories of guys that I know that have drawn a once-in-a-lifetime sheep hunt, whether, you know, whatever state you're in. And they go maybe scout once or twice, or maybe not even at all. And most rams in the state of Arizona get harvested within the first 3 days. To me, that's just like, I can't even fathom that. I can fathom shooting a ram on the first day, but, you know, investing 30 or 40 or 60 days scouting ahead of time, or as many as you can, and do all of your hunt before the hunt starts, that's okay. But I can't tell you how many times I've heard of guys that have drawn their once-in-a-lifetime sheep hunt, and they go scouting one time, they see like 2 rams, they show up the day before the hunt starts, and that night they glass up a band of rams, and I think guys just, they feel like they're not going to get one, so
right.
They just shoot some of the first rams that they see, and for me, in my mind, that's a mistake, because you'll never get that hunt again unless you draw it in another state. And it's your one chance to take a hunt literally as a once in a lifetime. I mean, my wife always laughs because, you know, the term once in a, honey, I've drawn a once in a lifetime hunt. You know, I've used that card so many times over the last, you know, 20 years. You know, it's a once in a lifetime, but truly, most all sheep hunts truly are a once in a lifetime. So I would encourage people to treat it like it's once in a lifetime. And that goes back to your question of logistics. You know, whether you stay in a motel or you set a camp, most sheep hunts are not near, you know, facilities and what have you. And you have to set a nice camp. And I think being comfortable with a nice base camp is huge. And if you have a comfortable base camp, then you can, depending on which units you've drawn, you have the ability then to branch out and do spike camps and, you know, sleep out on the ground and, you know, push yourself and then be able to come back to a comfortable environment where you can get a shower, where you can get a good meal, so you're fresh and ready to go back the next day. And part of the preparation, you know, physically as well, is not just hiking. You want to hike in the conditions that you're going to be hunting in. You want to make sure you're wearing your boots that you're going to wear, and you got to really toughen up your feet. And you know, I like to do all my prep ahead of time, and I like to have my feet, my body, everything just firing on all cylinders when the hunt starts. I've seen a lot of situations where guys draw sheep hunts and 4 or 5 days into it, they're beat up. Whereas, I always tell people, hey, take seven. If all you can do is scout 7 days, take the 7 days prior to your hunt starting and scout, you know, 7 to 10 days before your hunt starts every single day, because at that point you know exactly where those rams are hanging, because where you might have seen them in, you know, August or September or October, they may not be there. So I encourage people to prepare for these hunts like they are a once in a lifetime hunt, because they are a once in a lifetime hunt. And you know, go for it, go all in and try and literally document every single ram in the unit, and then cross-reference that with the game and fish officer. Most of the game and fish officers have a pretty good idea of how many rams, how many ewes, and how many lambs are in the unit. And if you keep a log of what you've seen, then you can say, well, I've seen 26 rams, but the game and fish says that there's 45 rams. So there's still a whole slug of rams out there that I haven't seen. That should give you hope if you haven't found what you're looking for. Or if you've seen 26 rams and the game and fish says, wow, I only thought there was, you know, 18 rams, then you've probably seen most of the rams in the unit, and you should have a pretty good sense then of which trophy, which one you want to shoot.
Right. Now, how many miles can a guy expect, you know, if you get one of these Southern Arizona hunts, you know, to put on your boots a day?
I think it totally depends on the unit. I encourage people to do, I'm a little different than most. I would encourage guys to do as much driving around the perimeter of their unit as they can. Glassing with big binoculars. And I think what's important is covering country out in the flats, looking up into the sheep country is huge. There are some units, obviously, that are wilderness, and you know, you've got a backpack and you've got to penetrate in on foot, and maybe there's not road access. But then there's a lot of Western Desert units, and as well as in Nevada, there's a lot of units that you can actually, you know, drive the perimeter of the mountain range and look up in all those nooks and crannies and cover way more country. Those sheep are very nomadic. So, you know, the worst thing in my mind you can do is take a coos deer hunter's mentality, and that is climb up, make a big hike, go to the highest point you can, and stay there all day. Sheep hunting, I very rarely stay in any particular spot more than about, you know, 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, and then they're either there or they're not.
You're either going to see them or you're not. And I glass faster because they typically are not hard to spot. You can see those yellow horns. You can see those white rumps of theirs. And I get up to a point. I look in all directions. I look everywhere. And then I'm off that point down to another one. But in units like Western Arizona, where you can do a lot of driving and a lot of long range glassing and then drive up another mile and look at a little different angle and then drive up another mile and look at a little different angle. At that point, I'm just trying to find sheep. I'm trying to document as many rams as I can. So let's say I on my third stop, all of a sudden I see a bunch of rams. I need to get closer to get photos, to be able to see what those rams are, get video. Then I, you know, do what I can to document them. I back out. I either walk, you know, use my quad or in a truck and just keep covering country. And you know, it covering country is huge in sheep hunting because those sheep are so nomadic. They do not have home range like a coos deer. Whereas my strategy with the coos deer is I'm going to know that that buck is in that canyon where I've seen him. So I'm going to sit on that point until that buck shows himself. Well, sheep don't have that many places to hide, and they're here today and gone tomorrow. So you've got to be, they're moving, which means you got to be constantly moving in order to catch up with them.
Got it. Now, say a guy, and you kind of answer this a little bit by saying going the, you know, 7 days before, but, you know, let's say I don't have a lot of, you know, vacation time or whatever, and I'm going to try to spend as much vacation time on my hunt as I possibly can. What can a guy do? I know you mentioned getting pictures and so on and so forth, but where can I focus my scouting efforts, like, you know, cyber scouting and stuff like that? Where can it, you know, if I was going to cyber scout?
Well, I think
using Google Earth and stuff like that, there's certain terrain features and finding water sources or food sources, stuff like that, that you would suggest.
Yeah. Absolutely. First of all, I'm going to say that when I'm guiding in a new unit or hunting in a new unit, I go on Google Earth and I outline the areas of my unit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go on Google Earth and I, every road in my unit, I actually draw a line, trace the road and, you know, put the road. So it's now on my Google Earth. Any drinkers, that I can find with Google Earth, I document, I get the GPS coordinates from the Game and Fish. So I want to know where every single drinker is in the unit. And then I use Google Earth in order to, and all my hunts, Google Earth, I have all of the roads documented. I have, all of the water holes, all of the best, you know, glassing points, that I feel like I can get to relatively quickly and look at a bunch of country. You know, and along those roads, I look for any points or peaks or high spots that I could see lots of country. And that's always a goal, is to keep moving, keep hitting knobs, and, you know, get up and glass. You know, Google Earth is a huge tool for me. I also use the Topo program where I, you know, plug the coordinates into my GPS. I do paths and trails and what have you in my GPS ahead of time. And, you know, a lot of times I'm going to a knob that I have already marked, and I've already done the bird's eye view and the flyover and all of that with Google Earth, and I have a sense of how much country I can see from a particular knob that I am going to.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So,
I probably not as extensive as you, but I do a lot of that stuff myself. I try to arm myself all the time with the most knowledge I possibly can. On anything, you know, especially when you're going into a new country.
Sure.
So if a guy was going to try to do this with a bow, you started off saying that, you know, if guys shoot the first ram they see, and most of the rams are shot in the first 3 days and so on and so forth. You know, if there's only X amount of rams in a unit, well, of course the tag numbers are very low as well, but, you know, doing it with a bow, I feel like if you got an opportunity, you got to take it. Do you agree, or? Or should you still hold out for that ram of a lifetime? You know.
Here's how I approach it. Obviously, I have not drawn my own sheep tag yet. Mm-hmm. I've only guided. But what I tell people is, you're only going to get this tag one time, and it's a 30-day season for a reason. It's a month or 31-day season for a reason, and you know, depending on the amount of time that you have with vacation, and you know, everybody's got their own sense of responsibilities and things with work and things at home and what have you. But I try and tell all my clients and all the people that I'm hunting with, I said, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You need to treat it as such. So when you first draw your tag, you need to let your wife or husband, you know, depending on if it's a female that draws the tag, if it's that important to you, you need to say, this is a once in a lifetime hunt. I'm going to hunt as many days as I possibly can. In my case, I'm going to block off all of November and all of December and focus strictly on that hunt. And I think hunting with a bow is very achievable. I think bighorn sheep, both desert and rocky, being able to kill one with a bow, the opportunity is probably as good with a sheep as any other animal. But the key is time. You have to be able to, have a ram or have, you know, top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rams or whatever that you say, if I get an opportunity at that either of these rams, I'm going to take them. For me personally, mm-hmm. I'm hoping to be hunting one particular ram by the time the season starts. I want to have a ram that's like my top ram. And that's the one I want to kill. And, you know, I think people get distracted. I think people get tired. I think people get worn out. And it's not saying that I don't feel all of those things. But I think that goes back to your mental preparation in that, hey, I'm going to use a bow and I'm going to kill this particular ram. And I've got 31 days to do it. You've got Christmas in there in the month of December and you've got, you know, if you're hunting in, you're hunting in Nevada, you've got Thanksgiving, you got all this different stuff. In my mind, it's like, okay, this will never happen again in your lifetime. Again, treat it like it's a once in a lifetime hunt and don't settle. So many people settle and then, you know, they say, oh, well, I got busy at work and I got to do this and I got to do that. It's like, well, if you would have set it up properly way ahead of time and let everybody that's important to you know that this is a very important thing that you need to accomplish and treat it as a once in a lifetime, then you don't have to use the excuse that, oh, I got to do this or, oh, I got to do that. And if you're using a bow or a slingshot or a rifle or whatever you're using, focus in on that particular animal or, you know, your top five list or whatever, everybody has their own idea of, you know, their own trophy and what they want to shoot. But for me, it comes down to a lot of times hunting one particular animal and waiting until that animal gets in a particular spot where you can, you know, efficiently go in and make a plan on that ram and get that ram killed. And I think until people take that mentality of, well, here's a pretty darn good ram, but he's not my number one. Okay, well, I still have, you know, 28 more days left in the season. Let's keep plowing. The other thing that comes into it is, you know, if there's multiple tags in the unit, you know, I fight this in my head all the time. It's like, well, I can't find my number one or my number two. I wonder if they're already shot and headed back to, you know, wherever, and I don't even know about it. Are they alive or are they dead? You have to treat until you hear that ram is, you know, shot by another hunter. You can't give up. You have to treat that as, okay, the ram is still here. I just have to find them. And then it's a hunt. I mean, because let's face it. I mean, it's sheep hunting. It's a hunt. Yeah. And I just think people need to take a little bit more time and prepare themselves mentally for a marathon and not a sprint.
Gotcha. Now, I want to talk to you about the sheep themselves a little bit. So, you know, obviously most people that are going sheep hunting haven't had a lot of experience, haven't watched sheep a lot like you have, haven't been around them, haven't been on any sheep hunt, so they don't really know their behavior and stuff like that. You know, tell me about it. Are they super skittish? Do they have excellent eyesight? Do they have excellent sense of smell? Or, you know, does a coos deer kick their ass in that sense? Or, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I cut my teeth on coos deer and I consider myself probably a coos deer hunter first and foremost. And I will say that most people that are good at coos deer hunting and have spent a lot of time coos deer hunting make good sheep hunters. Sure. I think desert bighorn and Rocky Mountain bighorn are much more visible. A lot of times they lay out in the open out on rocks. And you can see them. They don't hide. And, you know, a coos deer buck beds down and you know exactly where he is and you can't see him. And the grass is over his head. And, you know, so from that sense, I think sheep are much more visible. I always tell mm-hmm. people they're the most user-friendly animal that I've seen as far as being able to view. If you want to get someone excited about you know, outdoors and hunting and you know, take them and have them watch sheep because they tend to not be as skittish. They tend to give you a lot more opportunity to take photos and video, you know, and they're kind of like an antelope in such that every sheep has kind of a zone that they will let you get within. Whereas gotcha. a coos deer doesn't have a zone at all. If they see you or smell you or hear you, they're gone. I don't care if you're 700 yards, if you're a mile, if they see you, they're either going to lay down and hide, or they're going to leave. Well, sheep, you know, as long as you stay, you know, 300 yards away from them and you don't, you know, sometimes I tell people the worst thing you can do is sneak around in the rocks on a sheep. Sometimes mm-hmm. the best thing to do is be out in the wide open and act like you don't even know that they're there or that you care that they're there. And you know, a lot of times I'll walk and I'll clank my tripod legs together and I'll throw some rocks around and I'll talk out loud and I'll sit and face the other direction and then I'll move another 100 yards closer the whole time, kind of keeping an eye on them, but never looking at them directly. And a lot of times they'll just lay there or stand there and let you get pretty darn close where you can get some great, you know, digiscoping photos, you know, through your phone scope or you know, if you want to get really high quality photos, you know, mm-hmm. I like the setup that I use, with the Swarovski, the TOS APO adapter and my Canon SL1. But no, they're not extremely skittish until you get above them. If you get above them and surprise them, anytime you surprise a sheep, they don't like it. But if they see, you know, I've had sheep that they see me coming from over a mile and I just kind of slowly but surely just keep, you know, working my way. A lot of times they're tolerant and will let you kind of get close enough where you can get a really good look at them.
So, I mean, do they do the old run 50 yards, turn around, mule deer mule deer second look? Or
typically,
you know,
what sheep do is once they spook and they go up and over the mountain and they're gone.
Like ibex. They're gone. You spook an ibex, they hear one little noise, see one little thing, and they're just boom, gone.
Yeah, and so
out of there.
Sheep can be like that. You know, Dar and I always have a rule with coos deer is, you know, our rule, rifle hunters, never get inside a 300 yards of a coos deer that you want to kill. If you get inside that 300-yard zone, more than likely they're going to hear you, see you, or smell you. So if you can stay outside of 300 yards, that's your best opportunity, you know, to get a coos deer on the ground. Sheep, you know, are much more tolerant than other animals, mule deer. So, but once you spook them, typically they're gone. Typically you've got a kind of relocate them, and you know, they end up going, you know, a long ways away. So I encourage people on sheep hunts that when you're scouting and it's getting close to the season, the last thing you want to do is blow out your ram or blow out a bunch of sheep and send them off into another unit. Or, you know, a worse thing is, you know, well, in another unit is probably the worst thing that could happen. But also, right, if they're up on the mountain and now you spook them and now they run down in the flats, when they get down in those Palo Verde flats, sometimes they're very, very difficult to relocate. And it takes many, many days, sometimes weeks, to find them again. Sheep are very nomadic. Also, they're the most nomadic animal that I've ever hunted. Like I said, they're here today and gone tomorrow. The worst place to look for a big ram is the last place you've seen them. I can't tell you how many times where, you know, they move a lot like domestic sheep or goats, in the fact that they just kind of wander. And a lot of times if they're kind of working across a hillside in one direction in the evening and, you know, you try and bed them down, a lot of times they'll continue that path of progress. They tend to bed up at night, and stay put. So if you can, I always tell people, if you can bed a ram down, there's a pretty darn good chance that you'll be able to glass them up at first light. But I say that with this one thing. You need to watch that ram or that group of sheep until it's pitch black dark. Then walk out of there with your headlamp and be sitting right back in that same spot the next morning before it gets light. And you have, I'm going to say, about a 95% chance of seeing that ram or that group of sheep again. If you say, oh, I got them bedded, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've said, well, did you bed them down? Yeah, I hiked up there and, you know, they're going to stay put. And I said, well, you know, it's still light. Yeah, I know. But I walked out of there. It took me about an hour to get out of there. Well, they could be a mile away.
Yeah.
Bed them down till it's pitch black dark, till you can't see them anymore. And if you're in that exact spot in the morning at daylight, and I'm not talking like gray, you know, I'm talking like as soon as you can see, you have a really good chance of spotting them again.
So you said a couple of things that made me think of a couple of questions. So they don't like to be approached from above. So as a bow hunter, my first inclination would be to get a shot from above, assuming the wind is right, of course. What, I mean, if that's their number one thing, they don't like to be approached from above, what do you suggest a guy do?
Well,
coming from the same height, coming from the side, waiting up,
It totally depends on the situation. As a bow hunter, trying to sneak on a sheep, you're going to have to risk probably going up and around and getting above them and risk them knowing that you're there. If they know that you're there, they're probably going to booger out. The twist of that is, you know, I've seen it where sometimes you can let them see you and you can literally sneak right into bow range if you don't act like you're hunting and you don't act like you're sneaking on them. Like I said, I've walked right up to them with my camera and taken photos of them at 25 yards when I, you know, talk to myself, clank around, don't look at them, act like I don't even see them. And they'll just a lot of times sit there and watch you. But when you start slipping around and sliding around in the rocks, that's where if they do detect
you. Yeah, you look like
you,
a predator.
You're like,
you look
a predator.
Like a predator.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a, I've noticed, the antelope do that too.
Exactly.
I've noticed, yeah. You can take a white t-shirt and start spinning it around your head and walk towards them. They'll sit there and watch until you get to 100 yards.
Yeah.
But, okay. Yeah, yeah, I was curious because, I mean, I haven't sheep hunted. Well, I mean, I've went for Barbary sheep, but it wasn't exactly the same. And I rifle hunted for them. I didn't do a bow hunt. So I guess all I could equate it to was my Ibex hunt. I think that if I was sheep hunting, I would try to get in front of them to where they're going and set up an ambush site so that they fed to me, so I wouldn't have to encroach on them too much, even though I would be coming from above or even possibly below, I guess. You know, does that sound like a feasible tactic where, you know?
Yeah, I think getting in their path of progress is a huge thing. Trying to determine which way they're moving and getting in their path of progress is huge. You know, as much as I say, let them see you and, you know, all of that, when you're trying to hunt with a bow, I think getting in front of them, getting in the direction that they're going and trying putting yourself in a position that they're going to walk by you is a great thing. The other option is trying to sneak on them and try to move up on them without them seeing you, knowing that you're going to risk, if you get too close, you may blow them out. That's something that, you know, you have to take situation by situation. I think it differs with every situation, but, you know, I think the more you can scout, the more you can take photos, the more you can take video, you will kind of learn what they will right. tolerate and what they won't tolerate. And, you know, are they chasing ewes? Are they butting heads? Are they distracted? You know, are they a single ram alone? Or are they, you know, with a bunch of ewes? You know, I'd much rather sneak up on a single ram alone than sneak up on a group of sheep, because the likelihood of sneaking up on
more
a group
eyes.
Is, yeah, more eyes, yeah. And they, you know, the more chance they're going to hear you clank a rock. And keep this in mind, though, too. I've also gotten pretty close to sheep by getting kind of in their path of progress and then letting them hear rocks, and had sheep walk right up to me because they think you're another sheep.
Okay. Interesting. I've kind of done similar tactics. It's funny. One of the things I do in the whitetail woods, because you can't get through the trees with all that, you know, big oak tree leaves and all these leaves on the ground and stuff. You make a ton of noise. I've actually learned that if you walk with the cadence of a deer, that like instead of a normal biped type sound, it'll actually bring deer in because they think it's other deer walking through the woods. So that's interesting that you say that. I could see that actually working. That's cool. Well, you've kind of answered a lot of my questions without me having to ask them, which is great. One of the other questions I get all the time, and this is something I'm real interested in myself, is how to score a ram on the hoof. Any good tips on judging, field judging a ram?
Yeah, for sure. You know, on my website, actually just finishing kind of my website, jscottoutdoors.com. My friend Craig Steele has helped me revamp the website, and there's actually a whole section on scoring sheep. And on my blog that I've had going since 2008, the J. Scott Outdoors blog, I think I have like over 30 blog posts on scoring sheep. And
nice.
You know, I think if we're going to just kind of give some general ideas, I think the main thing is you have to realize that mass accounts for approximately 60% of your score.
Okay.
So you have to find a ram that carries the mass throughout the whole horn. But most importantly, you have to find a ram that has big bases. Because if a ram starts with big bases and carries the mass throughout the horn, he's probably going to have pretty good mass. If he starts out with small bases, even though he carries that mass throughout the horn, he's not going to have a big mass number, if that makes sense. So if you have a ram that has, you know, some of the 22 and 24 rams that have 16 and 16 and a half inch bases, and then their horn carries the mass and it looks puffy and heavy throughout the horn. Well, he's starting with 16, 16 and a half, where some of the Western Desert Rams are going to have 14-inch bases or 14.5-inch bases, and there's just not as much, you know, to add up there. The other
thing. Let me stop you right there real quick.
Yeah.
So how does a guy determine that this ram has 16? Like, I mean, you know, when you judge the ear, you know, you kind of use the ears, you know, a ear is 9 inches or whatever, and you kind of have a gauging tool there. I mean, what do you use to say, well, hey, that ram over there has got at least 16, 17, 18 inches, whatever bases, you know?
Yeah, John, I don't necessarily use any anatomical references, you know, like you can with a mule deer. If it's, you know, 22 or 24 inch wide ears, you can kind of predict the inside spread. I haven't found any anatomical features of sheep where you can, you know, try and judge the bases. The one thing that I do is, like I was saying earlier, is I collect all the data from the rams that were killed in that particular unit, and I try and get a baseline for the average bases in that unit. And I carry my phone with me or my iPad with me, where I have those photos and those measurements of all those different rams that were killed. So when I'm looking at a ram, I can say, wow, those bases look similar to the XYZ ram or this ram or that ram. And there's really no way to know exactly. But one thing that I do is I take mature rams that were harvested in that unit, and I kind of get an average baseline. So, for instance, like in 44B North unit over in the Plomosas and western, you know, deserts of Arizona, you know, 14.5 to 15-inch bases, you know, that's kind of the norm. Over 15 is very rare. Or in unit 22, you know, when you're talking 180-inch type plus rams or better, you know, those rams can get, you know, 15.5 to 16, with some of them getting over 16 inches. So I try and go off of past historical data, and I try and compare the ram that I'm looking at to the ram in the photo or the video. And that's where gathering as much information as you can helps. Keep in mind that 60% of a sheep score is mass. And so you have to have, in order for a ram to score high, you have to have mass, and they have to carry that mass throughout the whole horn. My preference would be that a ram start with bigger bases. The bigger the bases, and then if he carries that mass throughout his horn, if he starts big, he's probably going to finish big. If he starts small with only 14-inch bases, very rarely do rams, you know, hold 14-inch base. They're gonna get smaller. So start big. You have to have bases that are puffy, that appear big out of their head. And then another thing is you've got to have that length. As much as mass is very, very important, in order for a ram to score really big, you have to have a lot of length. And the best way to judge length is to try and get angles from all sides, you know, a left horn, right horn, you know, looking dead head on at you. You want to look for those horns that go out of the head, high off the head. So not flat off the head, they go, you know, up, and they go back, and they go out, you know, and then down, and then they drop. And then any time that rams tip up, or in Nelson I's case, that flare way out, in order for a ram to be really, really big, you have to have mass and length. And normally if a ram looks kind of stubby, he looks, you know, he looks heavy, but he looks short, he's probably going to be short. In order for a ram to be really big, you have to have both mass and length. And, you know, you want a ram to really tip up. You want to have a big open curl. You know, the some of the best scoring rams are those ones that have the big open curl and not a tight curl. A lot of tight curled rams are not as big as you think, because they just don't have the length. You need to have that big open curl, you know, the big basketball or the big hula hoop. picture like a hula hoop, and you know, the one that's a deep curl is going to score more than the one that's probably tight, which means shorter.
Got it. Makes sense. I mean, so she's basically doing a lot of homework. Yeah. sounds like a lot of memorizing. And you know, me, I am a terrible, terrible estimator of size. And deer, elk, I could get the general class, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, that's like a 150-ish or 160-ish buck. But I'm not one of these guys can, you know, really come up and all, you know, that's, you know, mid-70s. You know, I can't fine-tune stuff in it. And I could see with the ram, especially since I haven't been around them a lot, that I don't think I would be a very good judge of size, because they all look awesome to me. So I'm like,
yeah, and I think one of
I'm
the
like
other things
guys,
that
if it looks awesome to me, I'm going to freaking shoot it. So that's the way I am. But
and it goes back, though, to what I was saying, you know, with the once-in-a-lifetime hunt. And I think with sheep, if any animal you're going to get particular and you're going to try and really evaluate, I think it should be a sheep. I think one thing to keep in mind is you want to make sure that you see your ram with other rams. And how does he compare? I mean, the best case scenario is that your ram is there with six other rams and 12 ewes, and you get to see how that ram interacts with the group. You get to compare body sizes. Of course, sheep hunters want to harvest the oldest rams on the mountain. You don't want to shoot the young ones. You want to let them grow. So you want to shoot the oldest rams. You want to shoot the most mature rams. So a lot of times, you know, the worst thing you can do is have a ram all by himself and try and judge and evaluate a ram by himself. You want them to be with other sheep, see how they stand with other rams body-wise. You know, do they have a pot belly? You know, and then counting rings. Age is hugely important. You know, you talk about score. For me, you know, aging a ram and being able to count rings is, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, Jay, he really gets into scoring sheep. Well, I get into scoring sheep mainly because it's a profession and I guide
and I want to be able to provide. People are paying you to get them the biggest and baddest on the mountain.
Right, sure. But first and foremost, you want to find old, mature rams. That's just kind of the sheep hunter's code, is that, you know, you harvest the old, mature rams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, count rings. You want that four-year ring to be, you know, level with the ear. If you can, you definitely want that four-year dark ring, which is the most prevalent ring. That's the first year that a sheep can be sexually active. That creates that dark, most distinct ring in their horn. You want that four-year ring as low down the horn. When you're looking at them head-on, you want that four-year ring as low as possible. And if you can get them where they're, you know, almost level with the ears or level with the ears, you've got a ram, you know, that's probably 10 years old. And, you know, that's a huge part of sheep hunting as well. For sure.
Now that's something I can do.
Yeah, I mean,
that's something I can do.
I think you're selling yourself a little bit short, because maybe you just haven't done it. But if you spend a lot of time looking and analyzing, I think you'd be surprised how quickly you could get pretty good at judging them.
Awesome. Well, man, I appreciate you taking the time and, you know, letting us pick your brain about this. I'm sure it's a subject that a lot of people have interest in and really are probably afraid to ask questions. So that's kind of why we have this podcast, so a lot of guys can get stuff answered and get the information they need. So closing up here, just tell us about, you know, where we can find your podcast and find out more about you and stuff like that, if guys want to follow you that already pretty much everybody follows me probably follows you too anyway. So, I mean, I have a lot of East Coast guys too, so maybe you'll pick some up from the East Coast, but most of the West Coast guys that follow me follow you.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. The probably the best way, the central hub, so to speak, is my website, jscottoutdoors.com. From there, you can link out to the podcast, which is on iTunes. It's on Podbean. There's direct links right on my website. Also on Instagram. I love Instagram. I just love that platform. I think it's a great way to share and interact with people. It's my Instagram is at jscottoutdoors. There's a link right there on my website. And a Facebook page, obviously my personal Facebook page is maxed out, I believe, at 5,000. But I've kind of re-energized my J. Scott Outdoors business page. And it's just growing every day. It's that thing has really blown up, J. Scott Outdoors business page. But if you go to the website, jscottoutdoors.com, you can basically get to the YouTube, Instagram, the podcast, everything on there. And the whole premise of my podcast is information and education, and just trying to further the tradition of hunting and fishing that we all love. And I really appreciate you asking me to come on and value the information that's getting out there to people, and value the time that you put into it. So I want to commend you on that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Same here, man. Like I said, you're one of my go-tos. I don't listen to very many podcasts, and you're definitely one that I listen to often. I appreciate all the guys that you have on there and educating people out there. Not many people know this, because this podcast was only available on the Honey Channel Online. So only members got this podcast. I had this podcast for 7 years, and I stopped it about three years ago. And, people kept hounding me, hey, when are you going to, do that again, and so on and so forth, and some other people that weren't members. So I decided to bring it back, and, I enjoyed the platform. It's kind of a neat gig. I get to talk to a lot of cool guys and interact. I get to learn a lot of things. That's one of the cool things. I'm a student of the game, and I know you are. We've talked about this before. If you want to be a successful hunter, you need to constantly be learning.
That's for sure.
So, all right. Well, I will. I'll talk to you soon, man. Hope you had a good fishing trip today, and hope you enjoy the rest of your summer out there in Colorado, because fall's coming quick, man.
It is. I'm getting excited. I've got that Utah elk hunt on the beaver unit, and been really shooting my bow and been hitting the mountains really hard and trying to be. I want to be in as best shape as I can. By the time my elk hunt gets here, and I'm just looking forward to hunting elk again. It's been since 2006 since I've shot a bull myself with the bow, and I've guided a lot of hunters since then. But I'm really, it took me 16 points to draw the hunt, and I'm just really excited to get to hunt for elk again myself. So I'm kind of all in on that right now, and I'm looking forward to this fall. I've got some other great stuff going on, so really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. I'm sure you'll pull out a big one out of there.
Well, good. I'm going to do my best.
I know. All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, John.